Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Stevie Nichols. Some controversial calls in the Premier League today, no more so than at Stamford Bridge, where West Ham lost by 2-1 against Chelsea, but the visitors had a late goal ruled out for a foul on Mendy, the goal initially given, but then chalked off. For more on this, let's welcome in, shall we, Frank LaBeouf and Don Hutchinson. Frank, of course, former Chelsea, Don, former West Ham. Well, let's start with you, Steve. You don't have a former team in this. Did the referee get it right?
I think he did.
Really?
Well, because he catches Mendy on his shoulder. You know, if this is a challenge between two players in the middle of the park, one player gets there first and the other one runs over him, basically, and catches him, it's a foul.
He doesn't kick him, though, does he? There's not that movement there to kick it.
He's trying to get the ball, doesn't get the ball, and catches the goalkeeper.
But it's impossible to get out of the way, isn't it?
Well, yeah, he can jump over the goalkeeper.
But he couldn't get over him because of the distance between him and the goalkeeper.
Because the goalkeeper's out sharp. It's a poor header from Fofana. Mendy comes out sharp, gets to the ball first, and then basically he's taken out again because he gets hit in the shoulder.
Do you really think he's taken out of the game because of that?
Well, does he hit him in the shoulder?
There's difference between a hitting and taking him out of the game.
Does he hit him in the shoulder?
He's fine. Mendy knows exactly what he's doing, doesn't he?
I'll tell you what, if you think that... Because basically what you're trying to say to me is he didn't really touch him. Are you telling me that a goalkeeper is going to gamble on a little flick as opposed to getting straight up and getting after the rebound?
No, I completely understand what Mendy's done there.
Well, that's why he doesn't, because he hits him in the shoulder.
And he knows
it's not a little tickle.
He knows what he can get away with.
It's not a little tickle, Dan.
But even if it was a little tickle, he's still staying down, isn't he?
Well, according to you, you're saying he's going to gamble and just lie down and hold his shoulder.
Because it's worked.
No.
Okay, all right, Don. Did the referee get it right?
No, he didn't. It wasn't a foul. I think where I felt sorry for the referee, Dan, I was commentating on the game today, and where I felt sorry for the referee is when he went to the screen, and I said it in comms, I went, I hope he gets the different speeds, I hope he gets it in real time, and I hope he gets it in slow motion. Unfortunately for the referee, he got about four or five angles of it, or replays of it, but they were all in slow motion. I mean, that's not a foul. Mendy was never getting back in anyway. And the last time I watched the game, this is still a contact sport. When you have contact with someone on a football pitch, it doesn't mean that it has to be a foul. I thought it was incredibly harsh.
So, Don, so you go for a challenge. You and I go for a challenge.
You didn't go for a challenge.
Hold on. You and I go for a challenge. I get there before you and you kick me.
Yeah.
That's not a foul because it's a contact sport.
Yeah, but he didn't go for a challenge. In my eyes, Stevie, he wasn't going for a challenge. He was trying to run towards the ball, but the ball was a mile away in front of him. And then he's got the option of trying to hurdle Mendy. But you could see actually when Jared Bowen has taken his stride, when you see it very early on, he's off balance, like ridiculously off balance.
So he can't be
he
that
could
far
have fell over.
If he's
trying
that
to stay
far
on
away
his feet,
from the challenge, how does he not get over the top of Mendy? If
he was off balance. When you see it again, Stevie, Jared Bowen's
off balance.
He's
running
straight.
He's
nearly fallen down. He stays on his feet. And it's just an accidental coming together.
Frank LaBeouf.
Welcome to the conversation. Well, that's simply as it is. The rule number one, when the goalkeeper is in action, you don't even allow to touch him. So it's not about kicking or not kicking him. You cannot touch him, especially on that action. Bowen touched him, so it's a foul. That's as simple as that, you know. Even if it's a Premier League, it's not. Even if it's a contact sport, even if it's a Premier League, you're not allowed to touch a goalkeeper when he's in action. That's rule number one. So it's a foul. That's it. Yes, you can presume that Mendy clearly saw the other player and say, well, I would never get the ball, so I stay down. but it doesn't really matter. You know, we have to be a little bit impartial, even if we play for some clubs. And I'm not trying to defend Chelsea. I would have said the opposite if I thought it was a real something wrong from the referee. I think he had to go and stick to the rule. You cannot touch a goalkeeper when he's in action. That's as simple as that. So it's a foul.
Don?
I don't know where Frank's got that law from. I mean, has Frank just made that law up? You can't touch a goalkeeper in action?
No, you cannot. Check that out. Check that out. You cannot. You know, everywhere in the world, when you jump and push the goalkeeper when he's trying to get the ball, only in the Premier League I saw that because referee decided that it was allowed, but it's not allowed. When he's in action, you have to protect
Thomas Tuchel,
a goalkeeper. It's always been like that.
Dan, do you know Thomas Tuchel got asked the question, and Thomas Tuchel was referring to West Ham's first goal, and he even said that was a foul. I mean, there was no foul whatsoever. Mendy got clattered by one of the defenders on the line, and Thomas Tuchel's trying to say that one should have been chalked off as well.
Frank, overall, did Chelsea deserve the win?
Of course not. It's where I'm impartial. I think that was an awful game. That was, I know I love the guys and I love the club, but I have to say, guys, when I watch you, I'm bored. There is nothing. There is no inspiration whatsoever. You don't try anything. You go around and around. You have 80% of the position of the ball for the first half, maybe, I think, for nothing. Mm. So, no, you don't deserve to win. You did. Well done. 3 points. But keep on playing like that and you won't get anything. I mean, I saw the game, Sevilla against Barcelona. Koundé giving the ball to Lewandowski, a long ball, you know, and the guy tried to go behind the defense and score the goal. Only Chilwell did that the last 5 minutes, and it was a goal. There is no change of pace. There is no work from the front line where when somebody has the ball in his foot, or in his feet, sorry, the other one has the ball in the space behind the defense. It's the same runs, same boring and slow motion runs. Nothing happens. So they keep the ball, they keep the ball, they keep the ball, they keep the ball, until they have a chance to score. But it's not football. It doesn't work like that. It's like I only see my former club playing like that. I don't see much about the game. I don't see something happening. I don't see vertical game. I see horizontal, around, you play handball. That's the only thing you do. So, of course not, you don't deserve to win that game. You did win, perfect, for the scoreline and for the rank. But otherwise, you know, for the future, I'm very concerned.
What's wrong with them, Don?
Frank's nailed it. I mean, he played two false nines today. He played Raheem Sterling and Christian Pulisic as two false nines. And whenever Chelsea got the ball wide, I mean, Reece James is a brilliant player. And every time they went forward, I thought their dangerous situations were going to come from Kukurea down the left-hand side, Reece James down the right. And once they worked good balls into wide areas, you could see Kukurea thinking, I'm not going to put it in the box because Tilo Kehrer is just going to eat any crosses that I put in. Same on the other side with Reece James. He's thinking, well, I can't put any crosses in the box neither. It's a waste of time because the defender's there. They're too big. Kurt Zouma, another one. So in the end, Frank's right. What they end up doing, Dan, is they end up coming back, playing boring football, sideways football. And my problem with Thomas Tuchel at the moment is it worries me that he couldn't get a tune out of a £100 million striker in Romelu Lukaku, yet he ships him back to Inter on loan. Then he goes for Aubameyang, just thinking the name and Aubameyang's going to solve all the problems. If Chelsea keep playing slow, predictable football, Aubameyang is going to be in exactly the same scenario that Lukaku was. He ain't going to get any chances neither. So it was only when he made changes and he brought Breuer on, who was more physical, and then Kai Havertz, more physical, they started putting crosses in the box, overloading West Ham. West Ham couldn't cope with the pressure, and that's how they got their win. But before the two substitutes were made, my word, Dan, they were so predictable and slow and pedestrian.
Pedestrian's the word, isn't it?
Yeah, he just picked the wrong team. He picked the wrong team. Don't say that there. when your two front men are Sterling and Pulisic, who don't like being centre forwards, and your two, particularly one of them, and Reece James is your weapon whipping balls in, but you don't play anybody who even looks like a centre forward. Why don't you play Brozier? Because you've struggled so far this season. And it's staring you in the face that you need somebody up front Play Brozier. You're just giving him a new contract.
Right.
Play him. Get him some time on the field. Then you can start using the quality you have with Cucurella on one side and James on the other. He just got his starting lineup absolutely wrong. Now,
Dan,
he made up for it.
Dan, if I can ask...
The substitutions completely changed the game.
Yeah.
And they got away with it.
Frank?
Yeah, sorry, if I can add something. You know what we love the Premier League? Because we love the rhythm of the Premier League. Mm. We love, according to Don, the crazy contact of it as well. But we love the craziness of it. We're going to talk about Everton-Liverpool. I enjoyed that game, and we're going to talk it after. But what we love is the rhythm, the craziness, that sometimes, you know, the courage that the player they have to take on another player, to believe that they can do something impossible. It's why we love that game. It's why we love the Premier League, because everything is possible and you can try. But if you don't try, well, you become predictable and you do nothing and you achieve nothing. That's what I see right now. Players not trying. Therefore, nothing happening.
Chelsea then get the win. As you mentioned, Everton were taking on Liverpool as well today. That was the early game on Saturday. And despite the 0-0 scoreline, it was thoroughly entertaining. It was a good derby. It was interesting, though, Stevie, because after what happened against Newcastle, I asked how much of a game changer that was coming into this tie, and you said a massive one.
Yeah.
We didn't really see that momentum carry over, though, did we?
Well, not in the result. But I think the start of the game, you saw the team that was pushing forward.
Right.
But there are so many things about this game. For the neutral, it would be fantastic to watch.
Yeah, it was.
It had the feel of a derby.
Yeah.
It had 100 miles an hour. But you had two teams that were making mistakes all over the place. Two teams that couldn't take the chances that came their way. And there was plenty of them. This could have been 5-4.
Pickford made some great saves.
Pickford made some great saves, yeah. I mean, he was man of the match. So from a Liverpool point of view, if the opposition goal is the man of the match, then you're doing some things right.
Right.
But unfortunately, they got so many things wrong. And the one thing that sticks out in this game about Liverpool is Jurgen Klopp. At one stage, Liverpool played the third right back in one game. Now, that smacks of desperation. Three different players played right back. You've got two partnerships in central defence in one game as well, and then you're substituting a left back for a left back as well. So you've actually got one player in your back line that's actually played in the same place the whole game. Now, if that doesn't tell you that Klopp's searching for something, I don't know what is, because the amount of chances that this team gave up, regardless of who was right back, left back, centre back, whatever it was, they could have lost four goals. Now, they could have scored five. But Liverpool right now, I mean, 2 years ago we were talking about a machine.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, this machine needs a repair. This thing's falling apart. It needs some oil in it.
Why is it falling apart? The personnel's still there. Like at the back, the personnel is still there.
Well, the reason I brought up the so many changes, I think Klopp's making far too many changes. You know, we, as players, you like consistency. Consistency on where you play, you know, how often you play, all of these things, who you play next to, all of these things combined when you get them all right is that machine we saw a couple of years ago. Right now, he's sticking spare parts all over the shop and they're not working, they're not lasting. They're getting some good things, but you're getting as many bad things. Right now, Liverpool are just all over the place.
Do you agree, Frank?
I find Stevie a little bit harsh on both teams. I think in order to get a goal, you need to have a mistake from one of the players. How you can allow to get a goal? But you know, in one game, when you see that the two best players were the two goalkeepers, you can say that the players on the field tried their best, and they were stopped by two goalkeepers. And Stevie is right on the fact that it could have been 5-4. Yes, of course, if you are picky, and I'm not neutral, I'm completely neutral on that game. I enjoyed the game because I saw, of course, mistakes, but I saw opportunities. I saw a game with players playing 100 miles an hour and trying their best. Now, talking about Liverpool, yes, I think it was strange to see three right backs, you know, in the same game, to see some players, you know, not going like they normally go. But I have to say, I have to give credit to Everton. I mean, what I saw from Iwobi in the middle of the park, was absolutely exceptional. That guy was replaced in another position. and is outstanding. And the three at front, you know, Gray, Gordon and Mope, they gave a hard time to the three at the back in Liverpool. So, and behind, you know, Tarkowski and Cody, they did their games as Patterson, and Nikolenko. So it was a hard game for Liverpool. Liverpool had to fight hard to win that game, but they didn't because, of course, they faced a very good goalkeeper today.
Should Van Dijk have been sent off, Don?
I think it's borderline. I think it's one of them where I honestly thought it was a yellow because he was on the side. If he was straight on and he was that high and he'd followed through with a bit more intent, I think it would have been a red. I think it was very, very close. I think when you see it there, he's sort of leaning in. He's quite lazy in his action. And I think it looks a lot worse. I think the referee just about got it right.
Stevie? Ish.
Yeah, I'm with Don, and for the exact same reason. He's stopped. He's basically landed on it. Because if there had been a follow-through, then it might have been a red. But there wasn't. So, yeah, I was borderline. And I always think, if you're going to send somebody off, it has to be straightforward. Hey, this guy has to go.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm with Don just.
Are you with Don and Stevie, Frank?
No, I'm not. I'm not, because I see the ankle moving. I think it's a violent act. And I'm sorry, because I know he's late. I know he tries to get the ball, but it's very hard contact. And when I see, every time I see the picture, I have to hide my eyes, because I think it could have been very, very dangerous for Onana. But at the same time, there is almost the same foul on Nunez 10 minutes before, I think. And nobody mentioned that, because the player didn't even get a yellow card. But it's kind of the same foul as well. It's always dangerous. When you catch a little bit above the ankle, you can break the fibula, you can break the ankle. It could be terrible. So it's a violent act. Even if it's clumsy, it is a violent act.
Liverpool being going to be okay, Don?
Do you know what, Dan? I think, you know, jokingly a couple of weeks back, and I said, oh, don't worry, Dan, there's 108 points to play for. Then the week later, when they dropped points, I was like, oh, 105.
Yes,
96 now. I think that's probably what I meant a couple of weeks ago. I think what they're playing, Dan, and what they're doing is they're playing like kamikaze football. They're playing like their life depends on every single game. Normally, when you look at Liverpool, you see a batch of fixtures and you go, yeah, they'll win that, they'll win that, they'll win that. That might be tricky, but they'll probably get a draw or a win. Now I think what you're doing with Liverpool is you're living on game by game, and you go back-to-back wins, and you draw and lose points against Everton, then you look at the game after and you go Wolves at home at Anfield, then you go, well, that's a must-win. And I think when Liverpool are at their best, Dan, is they don't play 100 million miles an hour football. They play calm football. They control the ball. They get the ball to Salah in dangerous areas, same as Luis Diaz, Firmino, Nunes example. I think now what they're doing is they're so frantic to get over the line and just go, let's just get 3 points. It doesn't matter how we play. That's not how Liverpool play. So every single time they play, they're playing like on the edge, and it doesn't suit them. And I just think they're trying to survive. They're trying to find a way. Listen, the positives are, if you're Liverpool, and I'm inside that dressing room, and Stevie's been there before as well, and Frank in a Chelsea dressing room or wherever, you take the positives and you go, well, you know what, that we're unbeaten in three. That's not a bad run. Because it's Liverpool, they're looking at win, 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 but not in stages and not in batches. It's literally every single game they're trying to survive.
The biggest problem I think they have is they're not a unit. You know, they've played at 100 miles an hour previously. The problem they have is that all three parts of it, the back, the middle and the front, the space in between it is off. There's either too much space in between the front and the middle, or the back line's too deep behind the middle three. When they were at their best, those three compartments had all the space in perfectly. So when they went forward and they closed the ball, the three compartments went together. When they dropped off, they all dropped off together. So when you're attacking, teams can't get out if you cough the ball up when you're all together. And when you're defending all together, if somebody makes a mistake, there's somebody else there to clean up. Right now, there's just far too much space in between the three parts of the team.
The good news for Liverpool, though, of course, today was that Manchester City dropped points away against Aston Villa. Many expected them to run up a big score once again, but they only managed a 1-1 draw. Erling Haaland, of course, scoring.
Of course he did.
Nice goal from Bailey, though, with 15 minutes to go to give Aston Villa a surprising point. Of course, with it being Manchester City, Jan Ogafjortov was there. Let's see, is Jan in front of a hotel room? Let's see if we can see him. Just connecting. Paid for the extra. There he is! Hey, yes. The man knows more about fire escapes from hotel than anyone else. Jan, looking at it, what went wrong with City today?
Well, first of all, if you should congratulate me today, because I followed Erling Haaland so long now in so many hotels room that we published at Viaplay, we published a documentary today, this morning. So it paid off to be all in these hotel rooms. But you know, Dan, a lot of things didn't... It wasn't so bad. I mean, Manchester City was good. In the first half, there was not the usual balance, the timing in the play, but they created a lot of chances. To be fair, respect to Aston Villa, they were working hard and doing all they can to kind of stop Manchester City. But the funny thing is, after Erling Haaland scored his 10th goal in 6 games, and by that equalizing, our friend Mickey Quinn, who is, I think, the total opposite striker because he was smaller and fattier, Mickey Quinn was back in the days, but what a goal getter he was. The thing is, when they should kill off the game, they created 3 or 4 big, big chances. Then Leon Bailey came. But this is, of course, the De Bruyne, Erling Haaland thing. That is Lennon McCartney of football. I mean, they understand everything from each other. And then he made that 1-0. But they came out in the second half, then they're creating so many chances. And just in the middle of that, Leon Bailey scored a fantastic goal. Mm. I spoke to him after the game, and he just had that feeling. Frank and Stevie and Don will know. You know that feeling when you just touch the ball and you know, you don't have to see where the ball goes. You know this is a goal. And that's what it did. And to be fair to Aston Villa, they held on through a fantastic atmosphere at Villa Park. They held on to that point. And Steven Gerrard, of course, seeing that as a kickoff to the season, because I think that was a great, great point for them. And it's the funny thing is that you can go into the dressing room and tell the boys, well, when you can do that against Manchester City, maybe we can do it in some other games. But City should have won this game. And I understand why Pep Guardiola was a bit depressed after the game, because that typical Manchester City of balance and timing was not there, at least not in the first half.
Jan, I feel like we need to ask you another question, but you pretty much summed up everything. But as you're with it, anything else you'd like to bring up?
No, I just wanted to summarize that game, because it's easy to see when Manchester City goes to Villa Park and play 1-1, you think they had a very bad game. They didn't. I think sometimes we just have to hold your hands up and say also to Aston Villa, that was, I won't say a deserved point, but I'm a quite old-fashioned guy. So I say, when you take a point, you deserve your point, because that was the end result. But City had enough chances for 3 or 4 games. So don't you worry. They don't have the machine problem, as Stevie said, at Liverpool at the moment. Manchester City will just march on.
Jan, thank you very much. So what that means is that Spurs move up to 3rd in the table. They are now level on points with City after a 2-1 victory over Fulham. Hoiberg just before the break, and Kane getting their 2nd in that 2-1 victory at home. Overall then, let's just take a look at the table. Arsenal with a chance to go 4 points clear at the top of the table there, of course, in action against at Old Trafford on Sunday. City sit 2nd, Tottenham 3rd, Brighton sit 4th. They have the chance to move up to within 1 point of Spurs. Chelsea into 5th after that win. They move above Liverpool. Brentford thrash Leeds today, 5-2. United sit in 8th, Leeds in 9th, and Fulham 10th. Looking at the bottom of the table, Leicester City, of course, in dire straits at the moment. Just 1 point for them. Interesting stuff. Newcastle, they currently sit 11th. They really should have got the win against Crystal Palace. A strange old referee decision, though, saw the only goal they scored chalked off. We'll be discussing that with Mark Clattenburg, I'm sure, on Monday. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Barcelona with a 3-0 victory over Sevilla. It lifts them up to second in the table. Sevilla in real trouble, still without a win in the opening four matches. Overall, Ali, this is the momentum that Barcelona would have been looking to build, isn't it? From the start of the season, first game 0-0. Since then, though, three wins in a row.
And this would have been a dangerous match because you're playing against a Sevilla team that is desperate for a win. So you knew there was going to be energy. You knew there was going to be intensity. And Barcelona were very good about absorbing that initial pressure from Sevilla. Ter Stegen made a couple of saves when he needed to. And then Barcelona became a counter-attacking team. And when you have the sort of talent that they have in the attacking half, when you win the ball in a good area, as they did for the first goal, and then they go on the counter, you just have too many weapons. Lewandowski, Dembele, Pedri coming from behind, Rafinha, who was excellent today. Barcelona were so very efficient in the counterattack in the first half, so very effective. This is a new look for Barcelona. We have seen him, we have seen this team with the possession. Now they're winning with counterattacking ability. It gives you variety. And when you're Barcelona and there are moments in which the passing game is not working and you can actually have a second plan, a plan B, if you will, I think that's good news for Xavi and good news for this team.
And Lewandowski absolutely hitting the ground running.
Yeah, I mean, going forward, they've got so many weapons, not just Lewandowski. And it's clear that any side that plays against Barcelona, any opportunities they get, they're going to have to take. Because I'm not really sure how you stop Barcelona from creating chances because of the weapons they have. And if they do create, and when you've got a guy as good as Lewandowski right at the tip of the spear, then you're going to lose goals. So if Sevilla had taken the chances early doors, they might have been able to hang on in there. But because they didn't, and Barca go ahead, pretty much it was, and it felt like the game was over right there.
There's a certainty about Lewandowski and the moments in which he's about to take a chance on. In fact, you're surprised that he doesn't put it away in the second half. Yeah. The way that he took that goal is the quality of the touch and then the intention of that first touch. He's bringing the ball down so that he sets up his volley. In order to do that, you have to have a certain ability, a certain quality, technical ability to bring the ball down and then in a fluid motion be able to finish right away. It is a certainty that you have with Lewandowski that you don't have with many other strikers around the world. There's no question as to what's going to happen once Lewandowski gets in this sort of position. The surprise would have been that he didn't finish.
It's a great ball from Koundé.
It is. And Koundé, who's coming home, if you will, going back to Sevilla for the first time after having played there for a few years. Good ball from Koundé. And it's a Barcelona goal that it wouldn't have happened in the past. because this ball over the top, I don't think it's something that Barcelona looks to play very much. And it's a change of pace. Again, it's variety in the attack. It gives you different options. But you're able to do this because you have a guy that can actually play that ball, and you have a guy that can do something once you play the ball into him. When you have those pieces come together, that's when you have Barcelona playing at this level.
They're loving life, aren't they, at the moment, Barcelona? Very impressive stuff from Xavi's side. He spoke to Sid after the match.
Xavi, that's four games now. Barcelona seem to be getting better and better with every game. What analysis do you take away from tonight, which in theory was the first of the really tough games against the really big sides?
Well, it was a really tough game. It was a very intense game. We knew it before the game, and we talked about it in the meeting. It was important, the intensity, the rhythm, playing in the opponent field. It was difficult because Sevilla played really well. They changed the system. It was a surprise for me and for the team. We expect 4-2-3-1 or five, line of five. And finally they play 4-4-2 in Diamond inside. So it was difficult to control in the first minutes. And then when we controlled the game, we did really well. We create many chances. We are in a very good moment with confidence. We could have scored much more goals. So we did really well against a very difficult team, against difficult stadium. So it was not easy for the rest of the teams to win here easy.
Not easy either when maybe you're distracted by Sid's tan. On the touchline. Look at that.
That's a bomb. That's not a touch.
Straight from the touchline. Sid, obviously, Barcelona are getting better and better, but Lewandowski is just that level above at the moment when it comes to scoring goals. Brilliant take today.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about this a little bit at halftime, didn't we? When that ball dropped to him from Koundé, you just knew he was going to score, but there was an ease about the way that he took it. And it's a really well-taken goal, but he did it as if it just kind of, I could do this any day of the week, I could do this any moment I wanted to. And there was an ease about it that was really striking. One of the things that spoke to Xavi about post-game, though, was his all-round game. It's not just about the goals. We all knew about the goals. You only have to look at the statistics. I haven't got them to hand. I think it was 622 goals in his career. This is a guy that knows where the net is. But it was much more than that. It's his ability to bring others into play. It's his willingness to drop off and open space for others to go into. It's how good he is on the ball, both with his back to goal and facing goal. He's provided assists this season, particularly a couple of weeks ago to Pedri, was absolutely gorgeous. And Xavi talked about him being a player that understands perfectly what Barcelona are trying to do, and that there is a process there, and part of it is about education and part of it is about learning and listening. But a lot of it is just he's got a natural feel for it. He's just a very, very good footballer, as well as a very good goal scorer.
Sid Lowe, thank you very much. Real Madrid continued their perfect start to the season with a 2-1 victory against Real Betis in their first home game of the season. Vinicius Jr. would open the scoring soon, though Sergio Canales would get the equaliser. But Rodrigo would give them a deserved lead in the second half to give them all 3 points. Hey, they're looking good, Ali.
They are, and there are so many options for Carlo Ancelotti in this team. Today he went for rotation, he finally went for a different group of players. And when those things weren't quite working out early on the second half, he turns right back around and said, Valverde, all right, come over here and try to change the game. Rodrigo, who started the match, then took more of a central position, ends up scoring the game winner. But there are options that he has off the bench, whether that's Valverde today, whether that's Toni Kroos coming off the bench today. We saw it in last week how the depth of Real Madrid and Ancelotti and the ability to make decisions on the run made a difference as well. This is a team that just knows who they are. And even when they're not playing at their best, we talked about the certainty of Lewandowski putting chances away. There's a certainty about Real Madrid of winning games.
Yep.
Just when you think Betis is in this game, oh, look at them. They're hanging around. If you've watched Real Madrid play, you know full well that while Betis looks like they're fighting, they're huffing and puffing, here they come. You know who's going to win this game? Real Madrid. They know that, and Betis knows
that's
that.
That's the key, isn't it?
If ever there was a stat, actually, just looking at that, the possession was 50-50.
Right.
But Real Madrid had 24 shots to 8. So that tells you that they're quite happy to just sit behind the ball at times and then absolutely kill you on the break with pace.
Indeed. So Real Madrid remain perfect in La Liga. Let's take a look at what all this means then. Real Madrid 2 points clear of Barcelona in second. Real Betis remain third despite that defeat at the Bernabeu. Athletic Club, though, have the chance to leapfrog them, as does Villarreal. Just taking a look at those sides that are coming up over the next 48 hours here on ESPN. Plus, Villarreal take on Elche. Meanwhile, it's Athletic Club against Espanyol. The late game sees Valencia take on Getafe on Monday. One tie, Real Valladolid against Almeria.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Celebrations then from Union Berlin, will be more than happy to take the point. More drop points for Bayern Munich then as it finishes one apiece. Well, Jan, taking a look at the table, it's Freiburg who are top. Bayern Munich down in third, just 1 point off the top. Again, Jan, a little bit similar to what we saw last week. Plenty of chances, not enough of them being converted.
Absolutely, and I mean, this is breaking news. Bayern Munich are third in the league. They haven't won the trophy in September. I don't think they will get it now in September, but you have to give a great, great compliment to Union Berlin. This is a club that, first of all, was the second team in Berlin. Now they are above Hertha. Then they're from the East German part. Now they're above RB Leipzig, and they can challenge Bayern Munich. And Freiburg is another story with Streich, who's been there for 100 years, and they're top of the league and deservedly so, winning 3-2 away to Leverkusen. And what is interesting with Bayern as well, because we are so used to the names of their big names on the top of the top scorer list, of course. And now you have Becker, as you saw there, has been there for 3 years at Union Berlin, a great, great player, but it's not like the famous one. No, he's top scorer, together with Füllkrug for Werder Bremen. So, Stevie, let's prepare for a big, big excitement in the German Bundesliga. This is going to be so fun, seeing Freiburg and Union Berlin taking it out. But again, Mané was good today again. And Runoff, the goalkeeper of Union Berlin, was man of the match. And I think that you need those kind of performances. But Sommer last weekend, we remember, for Gladbach was man of the match. But you know how it is in Germany, that you shouldn't have too many games like that before people start talking. And we love it, don't we? We don't want them to have the trophy this month.
No, of course. And that's back-to-back draws, obviously, domestically. Next up is Inter away in the Champions League. And that's going to be intriguing, yeah.
Absolutely. And remember, Nagelsmann, he is the most out of football. They all say that. What happened last season? He was knocked out by Villarreal. That's not acceptable. He was knocked out of the cup 5-0 against Gladbach. Not acceptable. So he got De Ligt. He's got Mané. They had a good transfer window, although losing Robert Lewandowski, who quite coincidentally is scoring goals in La Liga as well as Erling Haaland's doing. So this Farmers League of Bundesliga, what happened there?
But we
have to always, you know, I'm an ambassador for the Bundesliga, Dan. I have to do that. But as you're saying, they don't need so many games. And if they could get problem now against Inter, which you could expect from them, there could be not trouble, but the intrigues at Bayern Munich, FC Hollywood and so on will keep going. And that's what we love.
I could say, if you're such an ambassador for the Bundesliga, why are you in Manchester? But I won't do that, Jan. Thank you very much, as always, for joining us. Enjoy. Where are you going? Which Champions League game are you going to this week?
I will sit in some studio somewhere in Europe and I guess follow Salzburg. I remember I'm also half Austrian.
Oh, okay. You follow that money. Thank you very much, Jan. Doubleheader for you as always on Sunday from Germany. It all starts with Augsburg against Hertha Berlin and Borussia Mönchengladbach take on Mainz. Meanwhile, in Italy today, it was all about the Milan derby, and boy, it didn't disappoint. Take a look at that, 37 shots in total, and it's Milan who get the win. Incredible stuff for the hosts there as we welcome in Gab Marcotti. Gab, this was brilliant from start to finish.
Oh, it was an unbelievable spectacle. You know, you want to see end-to-end stuff. You want to see teams taking chances, attacking. Both these teams going for the jugular. Look, you can put your old stereotypes away. I mean, Serie A is, along with the Bundesliga, they're always neck and neck, the highest scoring league among the big five in Europe. And there's a reason for it. Teams like this, they just go for it all the time. And yeah, what a game it was. And I think in the end, Milan deserved winners.
Why?
So they have Rafael Leao, who I think is pretty much a game changer. You know, they went a goal down, got a bit lucky perhaps with the equalizer, Çalhanoğlu giving the ball away. But then they just took over. They have so much intensity. Leao, at times, he's pretty much unplayable. Giroud, of course, chipping in as well. And as the game went on, they just seemed to get stronger. And then as ever, Pioli made his changes. From Inter's perspective, if there's a criticism, obviously no Lukaku. He went with Correa. He waited until the hour mark to make the changes. The changes did have an effect. Mkhitaryan on, Di Marco on, and of course Dzeko, who pulled it back. And they had their opportunities at the end. Let's not forget this. Mike Maignan, Magic Mike Maignan. Again, there might be better goalkeepers in the world, but I don't think you need more than one or two fingers to count them.
It's about trying to get this from Leao consistency, isn't it now, Gab? From Milan's perspective, from Milan's fans' perspective?
Yeah, people have talked about the consistency thing with him for a long time. Obviously, he's still a young player. I think it's a little bit unfair at this stage because I think he has been consistent. The thing is, when you see him run, he's so graceful, he's so balanced, he's got such great technique, his decision making has improved as well. People are like, well, gee, why can't you be like this all the time? And I think in some ways, you know, we criticize forwards more than we do perhaps other positions on the pitch, not realizing that, you know, they're not going to score a goal every game. That kind of stuff doesn't happen unless your name is Lionel or Cristiano, or these days, Robert or Erling.
How are Inter looking ahead to that clash against Bayern, of course, as the Champions League starts this week, then, Gab?
Obviously, Lukaku touch and go. I think that's going to have an effect. Simone Inzaghi, I think, is going to get a really rough ride because ultimately it is a derby loss. And, you know, even though we talk about the new attacking, wide open Serie A, chance taking, people aren't going to remember the fact that Mike Maignan had to make those incredible saves at the end. You know, I think they're only going to remember, oh, look, Inter, you had the lead, you let the lead slip, and you, Inzaghi, waited until the hour to make the changes to get into the game. So I think, you know, when people pick up their papers tomorrow morning, there's going to be a lot of criticism of Simone Inzaghi. I'll tell you what, Simone Inzaghi, I know he seems so mellow. You wonder if he has a pulse. He looks a little bit goofy. He's got the weird voice. But you know what? Ultimately, I think he takes this stuff in stride. He's been beaten up left, right, and center when he was at Lazio. I don't think he lets it affect them. The key thing is, you know, can he then get that across to his players to make sure that they don't affect him? And I think he knows how to do that. And I think he's going to tell them, guys, look, Bayern drew the last two games. They're kind of there for the taking. My one concern, of course, one of many concerns when you're facing Bayern, Samir Handanovic obviously is unlikely to put in the kind of performance we saw from the Union goalkeeper today, or indeed Jan Sommer last week.
So Milan, top of the table, level on points with Napoli after their 2-1 victory away against Lazio. Don back with us because Don wanted to talk about it. You're watching this game. Don, Lazio, well, Napoli completely deserving this victory.
Yeah, they were brilliant, Dan. Lazio took the lead inside 4 minutes. Then it was a test for Napoli being away from home. And they've lost some big players. They've lost Koulibaly. They've lost Insigne, Dries Mertens. But my word, they've found a young Georgian who's 21-year-old called Kvicha Kvaratskhelia. And I've been practising that for a number of weeks, as Gab knows, because I had my rant the other day about pronunciations. But this kid, Dan, is phenomenal. And there might be more prolific strikers out there like Erling Haaland, like Lewandowski. But believe me, Dan, and you know I've been raving about Victor Osimhen, and he was unreal tonight. He plays the game like no other. When they're under pressure, he takes a ball in his chest. He takes fouls from behind. He's a goal threat all of the time. He's a nuisance. He plays the game with a brilliant attitude. Laboka behind him in the middle of the park alongside Anguissa. They ran the show. It was a really, really good professional performance from Napoli. As I said, after going 1-0 behind 4 minutes in, it was a proper test. But they easily deserved the 3 points. Second half, they were fantastic.
Poor old Victor Osimhen. You've been raving about for 2 years, Don. You've just thrown him to the
side. I love him. Victor who?
Osimhen.
No. I'm saying I love him. Oh. I'm saying there might be more prolific strikers out there, like Lewandowski, like Erling Haaland. When you look at people's numbers and you go, what's Don raving on about? How can he put Osimhen in the top three or four or five in the world? Danny's incredible. And his numbers will be down because he's playing for a team like Napoli, who are not creating 15 chances like Erling Haaland or Lewandowski. So when you look at it on black and white paper, his numbers are going to be down. But I promise you, just watch him for 90 minutes. You'll absolutely love watching him play.
But he's not getting the headlines. Of course, it's the young Georgian that is, Gab.
I think they're both getting the headline. But yeah, it's Kvaratskhelia. This guy, he's always got the smile on his face. You know, he's so creative. He's often unplayable. And he always gives it everything. And, you know, he is, I know the word's been overused, the word is electric for him. Every time he gets the ball, you wonder what will happen. And I just think it's just been a tremendous coup for Napoli to go and secure him and to get him in this summer.
Elsewhere, Gav, Fiorentina won, Juventus won. Obviously a disappointing result for Allegri's side.
Yeah, before you mentioned, of course, who's top of the table, Napoli and Milan. Oh. I am contractually obligated because Jose Mourinho will be very angry if I don't mention that Roma have a game in hand, as do Atalanta, and if they win their game in hand, go top of the table.
So I'm only about here. Now, Gab. That's all I care about now, and at the moment now, Juventus don't look very good.
No, and Allegri's not doing himself any favors again. I know you have a Champions League game coming up, but you are playing Fiorentina away. Fiorentina play very aggressive football. Italiano changes 6, 7, 8, 9 players every game. And what's your response? You go and you change half the team and you leave out Dusan Vlahovic, and then you don't send him on. And then you make a joke about it after the game. You're like, at least he'll be better rested for the Champions League. Oh, yeah, that's real funny. In the meantime, you've dropped 2 points. It could have been more. Mattia Perin, of course, playing in goal for Wojciech Szczesny, had to go and save a penalty off of Luka Jovic. Juve, again, scoring first, failing to hang on to the lead. And then he comes out and he says stuff like, Paredes wasn't ready to play. He's tired. I'm like, oh, really? You think so? You literally just signed him the other day, and then you play him and you leave him. He's not. It's like he's managing from another era. And people have made the point that back in the day in Serie A, you could score when the pace was lower and teams took fewer chances. You could score a goal and kind of see out a 1-0 win. Now it's really, really difficult to do. You have to add to that lead. You have to create more. And Juve just aren't doing it right now under Allegri.
Get off the fence, Gab. Thank you very much to Gab. Just take a look at how things stand then in Italy. As I mentioned, Napoli and Milan level on points at the table, so no one's going to catch them, apart from maybe Roma, who have a game in hand, which is against Atalanta.
Oh, really?
But Atalanta could go top of the table if they beat Roma, Gab. Ah, you didn't say that bit, did you? For a lot more on what happened in Italy this weekend, be sure to check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. Now, that drops on Monday.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is... Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Frank is back. Don is back as well to answer your questions on Extra Time. Stevie, of course, with us as well. Excited?
Can't wait.
Good.
Don't have to wait long either,
no. Hello. Here we are. Welcome in to the latest edition of Extra Time. Stevie Nicol with us in the studio. Don Hutchinson, busy day as Don, as always, working a lot. Frank, not so much. Barbecue with the family in his big posh house, all the standard stuff. What's interesting, now I'm going to go off topic here slightly, and you won't have a clue what I'm talking about, but a lot of people play things like Hurdle or Wordle or Quirdle, things like that. There you go. Now, there is one which does films, and it shows you a scene from a film, and obviously you get six different scenes to see if you can guess the film. Frank LaBeouf was sent today's, which is a film that Frank starred in. How many scenes did he have to see before he realised that it was The Theory of Everything? Where are you going for, Don? Six scenes in total. How many did he need?
I don't know, four?
Four is the correct answer. Frank, how did you not know
that was the first one?
Yeah, did you just watch your bit of the film?
No, the thing is when I looked at the picture, especially the second one or the third one, I thought it was the Dead Poet Society for me. You know,
yes.
It was nothing to do with the biopic Stephen Hawking and The Theory of Everything. I didn't recognize, it's just a picture, and I didn't know it was that. It's only the fourth when I saw Eddie Redmayne that I said, oh my God, am I stupid or what? No, of course, it's a movie that I played in.
I was very impressed, Frank. Very good. Right, back on topic.
Dan,
yes.
Dan, can I say something? Because I sent you something. You know, it's about Mandy argument that we had done, and I. You know, if I cannot read something.
So just to take you back,
like,
if people didn't see that, let me just put this into context. If you didn't see the show, yeah. Don and Frank had a big argument regarding the Chelsea goal, the West Ham goal, sorry, that was chalked off because of the foul on Mendy. Frank's argument was, well, in the laws. Referees, goalkeepers get special compensation, special protection through the laws. Don said he was talking nonsense. Frank has been on Google and has found this.
Okay. So fouls. The goalkeeper can be very vulnerable to injury. For this reason, the referees tend to call fouls much tighter when the goalkeeper is involved. When the goalkeeper has control of the ball, let me finish, an opposing player may not touch it or try to kick it. If any part of the goalie is touching the ball, this is generally considered control.
Now, what's
therefore, you have my answer.
Right, but this isn't from the laws of the game.
Mode.
This is from something called ducksters.com, which has also got, once the goalkeeper puts the ball back in play on the ground, they can't pick it up again with their hands. And it doesn't seem to be the laws. It just seems to, goalies must wear unique clothing different from the jersey worn by the other players. Is this all the laws, Don?
He didn't have the ball, though, did he?
Yes, when he touches the ball, he's been kicked at the same time by Bowen. So,
but that's the point,
isn't it? As soon as he touches the ball, it's considered as controlled. That's what I'm saying.
The point
so you
is
cannot
the ball
touch
was
him
away.
While he touches the ball.
Frank.
Oh, my God.
Frankie, just to double down on your point, that's the whole point.
No.
Because Mendy didn't have the ball.
It's.
And so when he didn't have the ball.
No, it was in action.
Kicked. So he didn't have
it
the ball.
It was in action.
So that's a foul straight away.
If it's even worse. It's even worse.
Correct.
If you are kicked, if you don't have the ball, it's a foul. So we agree, Stevie.
Yeah.
You're right, Don.
My head's going to explode.
That'd be good, TV.
Normal.
Stevie, would you rather. Blimey. Would you rather see Atletico winning the Champions League? You're obviously a big critic of Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
Or Arsenal finishing top four?
Oh, Arsenal finishing top four.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, it's an easy one.
Yeah. You hate Atleti.
Can you imagine? Because the only way they're going to win it is by boring everybody to death.
Yes.
Time wasting.
Yes.
Diving. Simeone going mental at referees. Oh, no thanks.
No.
Hey, listen.
Yeah.
I'd rather give you $50 any day of the week.
Beautiful.
Liar. He's lying.
No, he's not, Don. He really hates Atleti.
I don't get it.
Does he?
Yeah. I don't understand.
What, that much to give $50 away?
I seriously can't figure out how somebody can get paid $20 million a year and produce the type of football that Simeone's team produces.
Right.
Year in and year out. This is nothing new.
Yeah.
They've been doing this for a decade, but you're the highest paid manager in the world. It makes no sense to me.
And we had some problems during the show showing you the PSG highlights. Just a reminder, they won by 3-0 today. Mbappe scored, didn't he, Frank?
I don't know. I didn't watch the game.
Good. Right, question for Don. What is the percentage chance of Lewandowski finishing with 40 goals this season?
Ooh. Oh, it's got to be high, isn't it? I mean, he's been doing it for years, hasn't he? Mm. Bar an injury, it's got to be 70%.
Woof. 70%? Stephen, you go higher.
No, it's not 70%. I'd say 50.
50-50? Frank?
I go with Don. I think as he mentioned, you know, he almost done that every year that he played for Bayern, and I believe that he's in the same frame of mind. So I would say 70%.
Who was the this is the anti-Craig Burley question. Who was the most positive teammate you played with during your career? Someone who always provided words of encouragement when you were on the pitch. Oh, good question. I like that.
Well,
does anyone spring to mind, Don?
I can remember, I mean, going to the opposite of that before it tries to come to the forefront of my mind. I remember the opposite of that, Steve Lomas. Me and Steve Lomas were playing for West Ham at Man United, and Man United had a brilliant team, obviously, at the time, with Beckham and Giggs and Scholes and Roy Keane, all of them. And I sat there and I tried to give Steve Lomas, who was sitting right next to me, because I was quite positive. And I said to Steve Lomas, I went, go on, mate. I went, pick one. I went, which one do you want? And he went, what do you mean? I went, which one do you want? Paul Scholes or Roy Keane? And he went, I'll take Roy Keane, you do Scholes. And I went, all right. And I said, I'll get on him, you get on Roy Keane. Let's stop these from playing first 20 minutes. And he looked at me and he went, leave off, Hutch. We've got no chance. We're going to get a wallop today.
I'm bummer running around.
I was like, oh, love me.
What about you, Stevie?
Sammy Lee.
Oh, right, really?
Sammy was always positive.
Yeah. Sammy.
Aye.
Yeah.
Always encouraging. Always.
And then he went to coaching?
Yeah.
He was coaching Liverpool for a while.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, no, he was coaching. He was with Sam a lot, wasn't he? He was at Bolton.
Yeah.
West Brom. Hey, the Rezzies at Liverpool.
He was the good cop, wasn't he, Stevie? Aye. He was the good cop.
Yeah, he coached with England. No, Sammy was super positivo.
Frank, for you?
Well, I would say he didn't play a lot, you know, with us, because he was a player-manager, Ruud Gullit, and that's why maybe he's completely the opposite of Craig Burley. Ruud Gullit was very positive every time. You know, lovely boys, you know, we're going to do well. I'm sure we're going to do well. We're going to create something. Yeah, I'm sure you can surprise them. He was very positive all the time. I understand why Craig Burley doesn't stand him.
Bayern 2013 or Barca 2011, and why? Do consider the fact that Bayern's aerial and physical ability was superior to Barca's, and that they were really good at pressing and counter-attack. It's like the team was specifically designed to beat Barca at their best. Let me give you that Bayern team, because it's not as well known as the 2011 team. So the Bayern team was Neuer, Lahm, Boateng, Dante, Alaba, Martinez, Schweinsteiger, Robin, Müller, Ribery, Mandzukic.
It's when Chelsea won the Champions League against Bayern Munich, no? Correct? No,
that's when Bayern won the Champions League against Borussia Dortmund. So that was the team that won it. Oh, and obviously they came from into the Barcelona side that thrashed Manchester United at Wembley, where they were just... out of this world.
Yeah, you got to go with Barca.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter how big, strong, fast you are. If you can't get the ball, it doesn't matter. And at that stage, nobody could get the ball off Barca.
Yeah.
So you've got to go with Barca.
Do you agree, Don?
Yeah, I do. I mean, that was some side Bayern had, but I mean, I think, in my opinion, the greatest team I think I've ever watched over a 2 or 3, 4 year period was Barca under Pep. They were just magical.
Frank?
Yeah, nothing much to say. Yeah, I agree with the guys, you know, Barca. Yeah. When you get the ball and you run after it, you can be the biggest man in the world, the strongest man. If you can't get the ball, you can't get the ball. You can't score.
For Stevie, with all the attacking options back for Liverpool, should Jurgen Klopp bench Salah for the Napoli game?
No. Yeah. No. No, not at all.
Is this just a bad run? What's going on?
Yeah. Listen, you know, it's... If you're not going to win a game and you look and you, the opposition goalkeeper gets the man of the match, whether he's saving from Salah or anybody else, that's you know, you have to take positives, and that's a positive. So, you know, sometimes it just happens in games. And probably Salah's going to break his, or his next goal is going to be hitting somebody's backside and going in. That's just sometimes right. The way it works.
Yeah.
The fact that he hasn't had this sort of barren run, and since I can't even remember, that's why it probably sticks out. Plus, nobody else is chipping in. And at the end of the day, Salah's got his new contract because his job's to score goals. But absolutely, he plays.
What do you think, Don? Drop him for Napoli?
No, I think he's one of them, Dan, where you play him through. I mean, do you remember the Neil Maupay chance today when he should have scored, Neil Maupay, and Alisson made the save? The player that was next to Alisson trying to put that block on was Mo Salah. So I think what's happened with Mo Salah and I think Diaz is they're playing so wide. It's like when they get the ball, they've got to score the perfect goal. They've got to go past a winger. They've got to cut inside. They've got to take centre-halves on into traffic in midfield. And then they've got to stick one in the top corner. I think Jurgen Klopp's got to find a way of playing them a little bit more narrower. But I think with Salah, you just play him through this bad period because you know he's going to score one or two and then that's him just flying then. Play him through it.
Don, does the Premier League have a VAR problem or a referee problem? The Mendy Bowen could have gone either way, but Villa had a clear onside but didn't let the play run. There are lots of big ones. They went there. The Newcastle one was a real head-scratcher. Mm.
That was the bizarre one for me. Listen, I think since the start of the season, there's been some really, really good VAR calls. Today was a head scratcher. I think you can see by the West Ham one, I think everyone's split on it. So give the VAR team and the referee an out on that one. Me and Frank disagree, but that's how it is. But the Newcastle one was really weird because that one got disallowed because Joe Willock was adjudged to have fouled the goalkeeper, Gaeta. But what they missed, in my humble opinion, was Tyrick Mitchell pushing Joe Willock in the back, which then created the contact on the goalkeeper. So for me, that was the one where I thought they got it wrong badly.
Yeah, that was like a dominoes, wasn't it?
Well, how could they miss it?
Well, that's... Yeah. Yeah.
But sometimes you can't explain something.
Right.
And this is one of those.
Yeah.
Because... I can't explain it. How it's not a goal is beyond comprehension.
There we go. That is it. We are done. Thank you very much to Frank and to Don and to Stevie. We'll be back tomorrow for more. I suppose a big talking point tomorrow will be Arsenal against Manchester United. Can Arsenal...
Yeah, right.
Wow. Wow. Are you working tomorrow?
No.
Of course you're not.
I'm
not.
Hiding.
You're in your United top.
Yeah.